Welcome to A Certain Age, a show for women who are unafraid to age out loud. Beauties, I have a quick question for you. When was the last time you overhauled your spice cabinet? Do you have dusty bottles of spices hiding in the back of your cabinet, or is that just me? Sure, I have go-tos that I reach for again and again and that I restock often, but let's be real. Some of these bottles haven't seen the light of day since Obama was president, and I'm someone who actually cooks every night. My guest today is going to have you running to the store for a spice and herb upgrade. We are getting into food as medicine, the power of plants, and phytonutrients to fuel health and improve the gut microbiome. Plus, we're doing a dive into collagen powders and supplements because I want to know if they work. We are getting the download from an absolute pro. Dr. Melina Jampolis is an internist and board-certified physician nutrition specialist, one of only several hundred practicing in the United States. She is the past president of the National Board of Physician Nutrition Specialists and remains on their board of directors. Dr. Jampolis is also a podcaster. She hosts Practically Healthy and is a serial author. She's written 5 books. Her most recent is Spice Up, Live Long. Yes, please. I am so excited for this conversation. Welcome, Dr. Melina.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I am very excited because I'm not kidding about my spice drawer. It needs an overhaul. I know you're somebody who's going to help us get excited about incorporating this as a sort of a longevity and nutrition additive in our lives. I know you've made a career of food as medicine. In many ways, though, you were ahead of the curve, right? But now nutrigenetics and precision nutrition are hot ideas. Can you share with our listeners what those terms mean?
Yeah. And I think I probably was ahead of the curve. I mean, you know, 22 years ago when I started and left internal medicine to go into nutrition for disease prevention and health optimization, it wasn't cool. It's been cool like the last 5 years and it's getting more and more cool. And then I started getting interested in nutrigenetics about 7 or 8 years ago. And nutrigenetics is really how our genetics dictate our response to food. So we see these headlines all the time that salt is good for you, salt is bad for you. Salt is, you know, saturated fat is good, it's bad. Some of that discrepancy in the media may actually be due to our genetics influencing how we're responding to these nutrients, whether it's how we're absorbing them, how they're binding to receptors in our body to do their jobs, or how they're broken down. That's what nutrigenetics is. And precision nutrition is kind of a broader term that incorporates not only nutrigenetics, but, you know, differences in just where you live, what types of food you eat, your food sensitivities, the cultural aspect. And then we also bring in something called epigenetics, which is actually means above the gene. So I like to say that your DNA is not necessarily your destiny, because your lifestyle choices, of which diet is a major part, can actually influence how your genes are turned on and off. And this has profound impact on longevity. And then precision nutrition also goes down to your microbiome and how you break down foods in the microbiome. So we have all these puzzle pieces that we're just on the edge of figuring out how to slowly put together to really help the individual making their best dietary choices.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. I love that that you share that DNA is not destiny, because we all want to feel like we have agency over our lives. And I'm a big believer that agency starts with information, right? We can't make good choices, and, you know, if we're not given the information that helps support that. And I know from looking at your website that you say that, you know, no herb or spice is a cure or, a pill for disease, but many are rich in antioxidants and have natural, you know, anti-inflammatory properties that can potentially reduce the risk of many common diseases of aging. You know, what is the link before we dive into, you know, particular spices and herbs, what's the link between food, spices, and longevity?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And when I think about longevity, I think, you know, not only about lifespan, the absolute number of years that you live, but I really think, and I think everybody should, and they probably do inadvertently, is focusing on health span and really, you know, putting more life into your years and being free of chronic disease as you age, because, you know, that's really the definition of healthy aging. And I like to talk a lot about vitality, you know, being, I'm an old mom. I had kids, at 40 and 44. So like for me, I'm 53 now, and vitality and being able to keep up with my kids kind of on the ski slope is really important to me. So, and the wonderful thing about food and spices in terms of longevity, and let's just say, you know, let's move the conversation away from just longevity, but just to increasing your health span, is that there was really so many different aspects of healthy aging. And as you mentioned, spices are very important antioxidants. So we're constantly being exposed to, you know, stress by our environment, even within our body by the breakdown of food. So it's important to neutralize those oxidative molecules that can damage our cells and lead to things like heart disease and cancer and dementia and diabetes and reducing inflammation. We're learning, it's so funny because I've been talking about an anti-inflammatory diet for about 18 years now. And in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, it's super cool and everybody talks about it. But I was lecturing about it a long time ago. And reducing inflammation is probably the most important thing that you can do for your long-term health span. And the wonderful thing about spices is that they're loaded with these wonderful nutrients called polyphenols that are really anti-inflammatory. That's their claim to fame, I think. They also have, you know, individual effects, particularly, you know, again, like you said, no herb or spice is going to prevent cancer, you know, or dementia. But if they can, on multiple different mechanisms, you know, if your one of your cells does get damaged, to help, you know, prevent that from actually growing into a cancer cell, or reducing inflammation so that the heart disease that you may be genetically predisposed to doesn't manifest itself because you don't have that inflammation triggering a heart attack or dementia. So in lowering inflammation and reducing oxidative stress, so you know, things that we just can't help being exposed to in our lives, are really the two most important things. And then there's all sorts of other little metabolic pathways that various herbs and spices are involved with, you know, kind of upregulating or downregulating. So you would want, you know, kind of kick charge your detoxification and maybe, you know, slow down the inflammation, these different things. And I think they have really particularly exciting benefits. One of the first papers that I ever read about herbs and spices was in their ability to deal with, you know, perimenopause, which, you know, I was
Sure.
starting on, you know, 6 or 7 years ago. And I just thought it was so fascinating how even with hormonal balance and detoxification and inflammation and even, you know, mood and the brain and all these wonderful things. And I just thought, wow, somebody's got to write a book about this.
And so
So
you
I
did.
already, yeah, so I did. I wrote two. My first one was Spice Up, Slim Down. And then I realized I didn't want to focus just on weight because that's too, you know, narrow-minded. It's really about health. And so the next one, Spice Up, Live Long, was really more broad and just about health optimization, which gets me the most excited.
Yeah, and that's such an important distinction that you made. It's not just about longevity and you know adding more years. It's about increasing your health span and adding more vital years to the years that you spend. So let's sort of dive a little bit more into this. So these polyphenols, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correct, you know, correctly. I know they sound like these antioxidant rock stars. They come in plant-based foods and spices. So are they only in plant-based foods? Can you get them through supplements? You know, tell us a little bit about how.
Well, okay, well, yeah, that's a great. I'm glad you asked that, and I'm glad you immediately brought up the supplement question because, you know, that's a really important. So I have a new company that's actually in the precision nutrition space called Ahara, and one of the things that was really important to me is to take a food-first approach, and you know, supplements in my that. Well, we'll get to that in a second, but you know, all there are so many foods. And yeah, polyphenols are phytonutrients. So phyto meaning they come from plants. So you can't get them from animal products.
Okay.
So, and the richer the color for the most part, and the more diverse, like if you think of color and smell as being a good marker, the better. And some of the, you know, herbs and spices are just, I love them because they're such low-hanging fruit, right? I mean, I'm a super lazy cook, I'm not gonna lie. I'm not like you. You said on your intro that you cook every night.
I cook every night, but let me tell you, I'm a super lazy cook as well. I mean, it's not glamorous cooking. It's just,
Okay, well, but
putting
that's
food on the
cool. So
table.
that's,
Right.
I
It's
love that. So like I'll get like a pre-made, guacamole, and I'll just add cumin into it, right? So because that's actually been shown to clinically reduce belly fat in a legit
You had
research
me at
study.
guacamole. I'm like, I
Okay,
am
seriously.
doing that.
Okay. But so these, polyphenols, but you can get them from like berries are a wonderful source, any citrus fruit, tea. If most of us just, so I now, it's so funny, ever since I started this company, even though I've been doing this for 22 years, now I'm like eating better. It's like, wait, I should know to do this every day. But if we just had a cup or two of green or black tea every day, we would go such a long way towards like our daily polyphenol requirements.
Wait, a cup of what? Can you repeat that? Because I didn't catch it and I want to.
Either green or black tea. I
Oh,
choose
green or
green,
black
but the,
tea. Okay, interesting.
tea is one of the best sources of polyphenols. But berries, so berries, citrus, tea, even whole grains, nuts and seeds, it's, and they all have different types. Like everybody's always asking me, what's the best? There is no best. You need a combination because they work together synergistically and have like subtle differences in how they work. So, the more variety, the better. But not just herbs and spices. It's just so easy to, I mean, I put cinnamon in my coffee every morning. I mean, coffee is a great source of antioxidants too. It does have some a specific type of polyphenol. So, any whole plant-based food is going to have some. The deeper the color, the higher in general in these polyphenols.
You make it sound really easy and simple. And I feel like getting to midlife teaches us that when it's easy, it gets done. We're heading into a quick break, but when we come back, I want to continue to talk about the spices we should have in our diet.
Ever notice that how you feel affects your food choices and that what you eat affects how you feel throughout the day? Well, researchers noticed it too, and now there's cutting-edge science about how food affects our emotional well-being. I'm food and science journalist Mary Beth Albright, and in my weekly podcast, Eat, You'll Feel Better, I look at practical, realistic ways to put the science of eating for emotional well-being into action. And this is important, without lapsing into negative diet culture messages that can really ruin anyone's emotional well-being. We talk about things like how the food in your gut sends messages directly to your brain. And we also celebrate something that I personally find often missing from food health news, and that's leaning into pleasure. Because food is delicious, and it's not just about what we eat. Emotional well-being is also about how we eat. So join me every week on Eat, You'll Feel Better, where we use science to improve mood through food.
I'm Erica, one third of the podcast Books and Betches, a comedy book podcast where we swear, spoil, and we talk about.
Whoa, 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 whoa. You cannot say that in this.
What do you mean? That's like our slogan. It's our gimmick.
It is, but just say we're a very funny adult book podcast. How about we just give some examples of things we talk about?
Well, there's a lot of chaos.
I'm Kristen, and with me I have.
Wobble!
No.
We talk about books, but we're not your AP Lit class.
I definitely hit on the major points.
You absolutely did
She
not.
did.
You talked
Just not
about.
in the order you thought she would.
You talked so slowly about one thing.
A lot of sidebar conversations.
I
Are
hate
you
her.
denying the existence of chupacabras?
You know what, Erica? Yes, I am. And we don't always get the facts right.
Epilogues don't belong in books.
Call it chapter one.
That's a
the
prologue.
second I
That's a
see
prologue.
Oh,
I'm talking about prologues.
You can listen to new episodes of the Books and Betches podcast every Tuesday morning, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Malia and I were back. We headed into the break talking about, sprinkling cinnamon into your coffee and sprinkling cumin on top of your guacamole and just really incorporating these spices in an easy, accessible way. And I am here for that. So I have a quick question, and I don't know if you have the answer to it, but I'm truly curious. Do we need to be updating our spice store? Like, do spices lose their potency?
Yes, they do. I
Okay.
was laughing when you said that at the intro because when my husband and I got married, like we, combined whatever resources and like you know, the big spice company McCormick actually changed their label about 20 years ago, and he still had, you know, spices from the original label of McCormick.
He can sell those on eBay.
So absolutely. I mean, you know, it varies. If you actually need to put, they're fairly not dainty, but they definitely degrade, like with light and air, they get oxidized. So, you know, 1 to 2 years is probably the best, you know, in terms of, but the really good barometer is just to open up and smell them. And if they really still have that rich, vibrant smell, they're probably good, because, you know, the scent compounds are closely related to the polyphenols. But the good news is that if you're opening and closing them regularly, that means you're using them a lot. So you're probably going to go through them. But yeah, it definitely is worth, I did that with my first book, Spice Up, Slim Down, is I after researching it, I was like, oh my God, I mean, this is doing nothing for me. I mean, it's not even really enhancing the flavor of the cuisine either. Like, I don't even know why I'm doing this. So it definitely is worth doing a little audit. And, you know, I tell people, just because, I mean, realistically, you're not going to become a gourmet chef using all these, you know. It's funny because in my books, I always try to do some of the recipes that the chef created. And I just get overwhelmed when it's like 5 or 6 spice. Like, okay, I just need like 2. Or 3,
absolutely. Maybe. Or you can, I'm a huge oatmeal fan, and I'm not eating it now because we're recording this in August, but I will say I probably eat it 10 months out of the year. And, you know, there's so many foods that are just, you can dump other stuff on top of it and make it delicious. Like cinnamon, Exactly. Cinnamon is a big part of my oatmeal regimen. And like, I'm so happy because I was doing that just, you know, for taste. And now I know I'm getting benefits. So
then I would challenge you then to take the next step, and you add a little, instead, maybe in the fall, you switch to pumpkin spice, which is going to get you cinnamon and cloves and nutmeg and some, I think, a little cardamom in it, which has even more interest, like nutmeg for the skin. It has some really interesting ability to block this protein that breaks down collagen.
Ooh.
So
there's
like super cool little, like, so that's your homework. You in the fall, instead of just plain old cinnamon, I want you to use pumpkin spice in your oatmeal.
I'm doing that. I'm done. I'm down with that. That's such a great tip. And I know your book is full of them. I do want to ask you a little bit about some spices around the world. You know, this show actually has listeners in 127 countries, although most of our downloads are in the U.S. But even within the U.S., people have very different diets based on, you know, just how they were raised, where they were raised in the country, or, you know, what their family, you know, backgrounds might be bringing to the table. Your book does talk about blue zone spices, though. And for listeners maybe who aren't familiar with blue zones, maybe you could quickly explain what that is and maybe surface some interesting spices from blue zones that we should know about.
Yeah, you know, it's so the blue zones, that was kind of an inspiration for my last book. I've been trying to get the author on my podcast, but he's pretty busy. So, but it's really, he did an exploration kind of over a long time of the areas in the world that had the most, you know, centenarians. So people who were living past 100. And he, you know, a lot of these, I mean, listen, let's be real. A lot of these were more isolated communities that
Sure.
had, it's a comprehensive lifestyle, right? So, but herbs and spices just happen to be a very rich part of everything that they do. So, but if you think about it, you know, and again, in a more simple term, like places like Greece, like Icaria, Greece was one of them. And, you know, the different spices that we may not think of, I mean, yes, garlic and dill and rosemary, but also things like anise, but things that we don't use as much, like coriander. I like to try to bring the global, you know, down. So for example, cilantro is a big one. And that's another thing. I always put that cilantro and cumin in my guacamole. And cilantro has great ability to regulate blood sugar, which is an issue that many middle-aged women start to focus on or have issues with weight shifts from butt to gut, which is actually an indirect measure of your ability to control your blood sugar. So that's getting back to the international, but, you know, Italy, we know that, you know, basil and garlic and marjoram and oregano obviously is a big part of that. Thyme, we know thyme is great for the brain. I do just a simple roasted cauliflower with thyme, because thyme is one of the most interesting for, you know, potentially the ability to slow down cancer, and also for brain health. There was a cool study I quoted in one of my books where mice, after being given thyme, were able to run through a maze like significantly faster within 30 minutes, just from one, like, quote unquote, dose of thyme. So,
wow.
Yeah,
and thyme's pretty hardy. Thyme's pretty hardy. I have thyme and rosemary that kind of like overwinter in my garden, and like lavender. We had a very mild winter last year, and they kind of hung on and hung around. So that's like something interesting to put.
But see, that's such an interesting thing though, because their hardiness indicates their antioxidants. Because phytonutrients, these polyphenols, are built up in plants as protection against the environment. So the fact that that's such a cool like tie-in that they're higher, and that's probably a big part of it. But it's just more like Singapore and Hong Kong with Chinese five spice. Again, I'm always looking for practical ways so when you have Chinese five spice, you get five for one, just making your life a little bit easier. But things
totally.
Like that.
We like the easy button, Dr. Melina. We hit that easy button every time we can.
Absolutely. So, you know, those are just, and of course, you know, more South American countries, Costa Rica, with things like cayenne, we know that a spicier diet, so having a little bit more heat, is just that alone is a 14% decreased risk of dying. So it's kind of not, I do want to say that you don't have to, if you don't tolerate spice well, you don't have to have, you know, heat in your diet, just having herbs and spices in general has huge upside. So if you know, I don't want you to force, you know, hot.
Right. There's like a buffet of choices. And the spice world offers enough that people can probably find something that fits their palate. I'm going to throw something at you, and I hope it's not a curveball. One of my favorite spices is smoked paprika. What can you tell me about that? I'm putting you on the spot.
No, it's okay. And I love it. So paprika, it's in the same family as cayenne and these peppers. So it actually has some similar without the heat. So I think that's a great example. But it has a vibrant color, right? So
yes,
that's your barometer that's a, you know, all herbs and spices do. My friend just got back from Morocco and was texting me pictures of the spice markets. She's like, you're nirvana, you know. But so I think smoked paprika is great. I mean, and that's something that, you know, has a really wonderful flavor that you can throw on a lot of stuff. But because it's in the same family as cayenne, you can really get a lot of the benefits without the heat. So that's a terrific thing. And what do you use it on?
You know, I use it on,
put you on the spot.
I truly use it on everything, but I like to sprinkle it on avocado toast, because as much as I love avocado toast, sometimes it needs a little zhuzhing up, you know, to... I like a little sort of savory, spicy. So that's, I sprinkle on that. But I put it on everything, honestly. It goes in like chili. It goes on top of like toasted bread, you know, with kind of olive oil. I don't know. I love it. It's one of my
faves. I think it's great.
And that spice jar is not dusty in my cabinet. That spice jar gets a lot of use.
that's good. That's very good. No, but even things like, you know, eggs are such, you know, eggs and chili are probably my two favorite, like, lazy mom's thing,
yeah,
ways to add herbs and spices. Cause, you know, like, I'll just throw some oregano in my kids' eggs in the morning and I feel like I'm a good mom, you know? So, that's like any herb or spice. And I do like a different combination of frittatas, which is awesome for herbs and spices. And then chili, I mean, you can just throw in everything.
You can throw in everything.
Cool thing.
So maybe like this is a, yeah, that's a good, so this is, maybe is a good time to ask this question. You know, what is the difference between a fresh herb and a dried herb in terms of its efficacy?
Yeah, it's a good point. So dried is going to be more concentrated,
okay,
right? Because it doesn't have a lot of water, but fresh is going to have more naturally occurring vitamins, because especially the water soluble vitamins like B and C can degrade very quickly over time. So I always tell people, are always asking me, what's the best herb and spice? What should I have, a fresh or dried? Have them how you will have them on a regular basis. So for me, I far prefer cilantro to coriander. So coriander is like the dried seed of the cilantro plant. I'm not a big fan of coriander. It's just a little, but cilantro, I mean, as long as I eat it fresh, I will have it till the cows come home.
Yeah, me too. I love cilantro.
So I think have what you want. I mean, the spice is going to be, or the dried form is going to be more concentrated. And also just for the average person, like, I don't know about you, you're probably better than me. you have herbs, but I'll buy all these fresh herbs and have all these, you know, hopes of, and then the week gets away from me and I'm like,
believe me, I have thrown away many, many bags of wilted herbs. Cause you know, and also the spring mix, right? There's that old, like the joke about like, I need to buy a box of spring mix so I can throw it away at the end of the week. You know, we all have these dreams and hopes, but you know, I've got a funny hack. I mean, I grew up in New York City, and so we did not have gardens really, but I live in a suburban neighborhood now. So I am able to have a garden. And that's why I've got some of these herbs. But here's a little hack that I picked up a few years ago. I grocery shop everywhere, but when I go to Whole Foods, they often sell at the beginning and throughout the summer little basil plants. And I keep a basil plant on my kitchen windowsill because talk about the easy button. Like even though I've got basil in my garden, I'm like, my garden is several steps away from where I'm cooking. And so it's great. And it's like, you know, and it's just I kind of tear it up and just throw it into whatever. And when you said eggs, I'm like, that's exactly where the eggs are going. Like the basil is going. Yeah. It's getting mixed into scrambled eggs. And I do it a lot for my boys because, I eat salads. I enjoy salads. But they, you know, you got to sneak some of the greens in for them. So that's a little hack for anyone who's listening, who's thinking, I don't have a garden. It's like, but you probably have a windowsill and you can keep some of the stuff on there.
You know what else I do with the basil leaves? Because it is the one plant that I don't regularly kill in my house. I'll tear off a few leaves. And like, if I do like a turkey roll up wrap for lunch, I'll use the basil leaves instead of lettuce in the little wrap. And it's with a little Dijon mustard. It's fabulous. It's really good.
All right. You know what I'm having for lunch after I go hit the store on my way home from this podcast recording.
Perfect.
I do want to ask you a little bit. I know in your book you talk about age accelerators and some things to avoid. And so, you know, what are the kinds of not just lifestyle, or maybe it's lifestyle, but what are some sort of foods and things that are causing that sort of oxidated molecules that you referred to earlier in the show that we want to work against?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the interesting thing is when I first wrote this book, I hadn't started my new company and I hadn't really dug into epigenetics, you know, which is something that we actually test at Ahara. We test how fast your cells are aging compared to your actual chronologic age. So that's super interesting. So I have even more data on these age accelerators increasing the rate of aging. So if you can manage your rate of aging, which is something that now this company actually just came out in 2020, where they're really more accurately measuring the rate of aging. If we can slow down the rate of aging, we could decrease the risk of chronic disease by about 57%
on the
individual level. So, and the biggest contributors to excel that are really putting on the gas are, probably I would narrow it down though to three things. Ultra processed food. What does that mean? Because the term processed food gets thrown a lot out on Instagram and with TikTok, whatever. But ultra processed food is really just food parts. Like they'll take corn solids and combine it with artificial flavors, artificial sweeteners, emulsifiers, sugar, fat, whatever it is. And it's not actually, you know, it's, yeah, corn is the basis, but it's an extract of corn. It has no real food in it. That's ultra processed food. So, and also some of it has real food, but it's been, you know, processed to within an inch of its life, whether it's added sugar or salt or fat or fried or added, you know, emulsifiers or preservatives so that, you know, a Twinkie can live for, you know, 130 years and not be. So ultra processed foods, we know accelerates aging. Sugar sweetened beverages, even more than sugar itself. I think people are, I mean, I don't know about you, but I have a sweet tooth. And I think the sweet tooth actually got worse during perimenopause.
Yes.
Whereas now, like I can't, if a meal is not complete, unless I have a little something sweet.
Like I'm so happy you said that, because I have to end every meal with the bare minimum, like chocolate covered almonds.
Yes, that's a great choice too. Very good. Dark chocolate, great source of polyphenols, and so are almonds, also a great source of soluble fiber. So sugar sweetened beverages, and then processed red meat and charred meat. So those two charred, so when you put things on a grill,
okay.
That wonderful grilled, which I have to admit, I love that. But it actually causes, you know, cancer causing compounds called heterocyclic amines. Now, this doesn't mean that you're going to get cancer if you go to a barbecue, but the cumulative effect of having too much processed red meat or charred meat over time without balancing it out with herbs and spices. So that's a cool thing too. One of my colleagues at UCLA did a study where she showed that just adding rosemary to a marinade of meat when you barbecue it decreases the formation of those cancer-causing compounds by 70%.
So holy Toledo. That's wild.
Isn't that cool?
Yes, because my husband loves to barbecue, and frankly, he's very good at it. So this is...
So does mine. And my husband loves to smoke meats, too, and he's even better at that. You should tell him to get a meat smoker.
We're going to have dinner, Dr. Melina, at some point. Yeah, but, and then we're going to make the men... It. We're making the men cook it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's pretty much a normal thing in my house. The one time I tried to cook, I was going to boil some eggs, and I turned the pot on and then got distracted on the computer, and the pot melted.
So. Oh, my God. That's hysterical. It's hysterical.
I'm not the best in the kitchen.
Yeah, but this is good to know that you can kind of still enjoy in moderation some foods that, you know.
Yeah, I think people get a little too crazy about cutting sugar completely. But it's really the sugar sweetened beverages that do this huge like dose of sugar right to your liver, because they're just absorbed that quickly. And that's really, you know, that can be pro-inflammatory, and it can also lead to fatty liver disease, which is something that we see a lot with poor blood sugar control. So, you know,
and is that something that increases as people age, this fatty liver disease? Does aging play any role in that? Or is it simply just the food choices?
No, it's a combination of things. There's hormonal changes, but a big part of it is changes in body composition, right? Which are due to hormones. So as we age, we lose about 3% of our muscle mass with each decade, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it adds up. And it's any muscle loss is significant, particularly for women. Who, you know, don't have as much in the first place. But then, you know, the more fat you have and the less muscle, the more insulin resistance you tend to have. So fatty liver is really related to insulin resistance. So when your body doesn't respond as well, and that definitely increases with age, and we see a dramatic increase. That's one of the biggest things with, I don't know about you, but I mean, for me, I have so many women patients who come in and say, I never had a gut before. I mean, you know, I was always more, now it's like my butt is nothing. I was like a pancake and I've got this gut. And that's insulin resistance, and that's associated with fatty liver disease. So we definitely see more of that with age.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've had that experience myself. Like I just, you know, yes, I've seen my own body change, and I've been trying to build muscle, because I've had a number of fitness experts on the show who've talked about the importance of it and the importance of adding protein to your diets in order to build muscle, which is an effective fat, you know, burning machine. And you know, obviously we also need muscles to keep our, you know, muscular skeletal system upright and intact, and talk about adding to, your health span and aging with vitality. You really need to.
Oh, that's a huge issue. Yeah.
You need to focus on these things.
Body mass is a big, you know, it's a big component of it. And it's a component certainly of vitality and just general disease. I mean, we know that when we look at epigenetics, that exercising at least 4 days a week, and including strength training in that, is really critical to slow your rate of aging.
I love that.
As is stress management, but you know, I can only do so much.
I know, but it's important. And I really do think the word is getting out, because I look at the women in my own life, you know, from across a range of places, and women are really prioritizing, you know, weight training. It's so important. Yeah. It's so important. So anyone who's listening to this who hasn't done it yet, it's not too late.
By the way, one more thing though, you don't have to go to the gym. I mean, I honestly, I do like push-ups And I do, I have a home workout that I do because I just don't have time to go to the gym. So I just don't, I want your listeners to think they don't have to pump iron. I mean, it's great, but doing a real push-up and working your way up to that is probably one of the single best exercises that you can do for biceps, triceps, back, chest, shoulders. I mean, it's abs, it's very effective. So you don't necessarily have to go to the gym, you know.
Yeah, you can be at home doing weights, doing things with your own body weight as you push up, which is a great point. Let's switch gears for a minute because, you know, I would love to talk to you forever, but we have, you know, a limited amount of time. I want to talk a little bit about collagen, which I know is, you know, the scaffolding of our skin. Collagen is impacted by aging. And I'm just curious. I personally, you know, see a lot of marketing around powders and supplements. It's really, you know, when I'm on Instagram, when I'm on Facebook, when I'm like opening a women's magazine, and I'm always curious, and I haven't had somebody to ask, but now I have you, and I'm just dying to know, what's your take on this? Are powders and supplements effective? Is one more effective than the other?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really important question. And if you would have asked me this 10 years ago, which people did, I would have said no. But I think because I would have said protein is protein. And if you have high quality protein, it's broken down into the basic amino acids. And I still believe that to some extent. But I think there is newer research that's been done. And here's the thing where you have to be kind of a smart consumer. And not just fall for the claims, but there are like branded ingredients, not brands specifically. I'm not going to, you know, share any brands, but there's one called Verisol, that is actually a clinically proven form of collagen. So, you know,
and how do you spell that, Dr. Molina? How do you spell
V as in Victor, Erisol.
Okay.
And that is an ingredient, a collagen ingredient that has been clinically proven after 3 months. Now it takes 3 months because that's how long it takes for, you know, collagen to kind of turn over in your body. But it's been clinically proven to increase, you know, the elasticity of the skin, to decrease wrinkles. And then there's another form of collagen called UCP2 that's more on the joint side because we have, you know, a lot of collagen in our joints, and that's been clinically shown. So I think, you know, it is important when you're choosing supplements in general is to, I think, you know, you really have to have a third party test it, and whenever possible, have branded ingredients. So it's really simple. You don't even have to know the specifics, but if you just turn it over and look for like a trademark or a registered in the ingredient list, that tells you that they've invested the money to do research to show that the form of collagen and the dose. So, you know, there's different sizes of the collagen molecule, where some may just be not really that well absorbed. So you're not really, you know, getting what you pay for. So I think it is important to look for branded ingredients and third-party tested supplements and taking them in the right dose. So anything, be suspicious if they just have like a little star next to, you know, you just don't know how much actual collagen is in there. And it could be just, you know, fairy dust that they're putting in it. these branded ingredients are more expensive, right?
Right, so, of course.
I mean, I know because we're actually formulating a lot of our own products now for Ahara. And for to, you know, you, on some level, you get what you pay for specifics. You know, vitamins and minerals are cheap, so you can get those. That's why you can get a multivitamin, just a basic one for a fairly reasonable price. But when you start getting into like, you know, specialized supplements, and I would certainly call collagen, you know, if you're going to invest in collagen, invest in a branded ingredient containing supplement that's third-party tested. I think you'll be good to go. But there is pretty good research on it if you're using the right product. And in terms of, but you have to stay.
You got
to
do your homework like anything else. So that's great advice. And it's a great tip about turning the bottle over, looking to see if they give you like dosing information, looking for proof that they've invested in clinical trials and stuff. Thank you.
It's you know, the supplement world is dizzyingly complex, and you know, social media has really you know, unfortunately, you know, these influencers now have the voice of, you know, they put their name on something and it's an overnight, oh, it must be good if whoever X is doing it, and you do have to still be, you know, a savvy consumer and take things with a grain of salt or, you know, a grain of
Is there paprika. A particular, like, I know when you think of, like, Consumer Reports, you know, is there something that is there an organization or a website that you're aware of that helps people decode supplements and assess which ones are worth their time and money?
Well, I really like a site called Consumer Lab, but it's a subscription site. And the problem with them is that they're limited that to who you have to, you know, the company has to give them the product to assess. So, you know, I think going with bigger name companies is probably safer because they have more to lose. These fly-by-night companies that, you know, I remember when raspberry ketones were hot and like every company was like, you know, Essien on Dr. Oz, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, be suspicious of those overhyped claims because a big company that's done the research is never going to overhype things. So if it sounds too good to be true, it is.
It is. I love it.
There's just
great advice. Yes. Great advice and a great reminder. This has been fantastic. We are heading into our speed round. It's just a very quick way of moving through a little bit more material before our time together ends. And it's just 1 to 2 word answers to these questions. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Let's do it.
I do well.
This is like a pass or fail. Everyone passes.
Yeah, exactly.
And everyone passes, by the way. All right.
Oh, God. Okay. Pressure's off then.
This spice or herb is always in my grocery cart.
Oregano.
I keep meaning to add more of this spice to my diet.
Thyme.
I reach for this spice almost every time I cook, even though mostly it's my husband who's cooking.
Cumin.
Okay. Vitamins have their role too. Do you believe in multivitamins or individual ones?
Multi.
Okay. Is there a vitamin that helps our body better absorb all the nutrients from our food and spices?
Actually, fat.
It's not fat. Interesting.
With all the fat soluble vitamins. That's a big mistake that people make. Sorry, you said one word.
No, but that's good advice. We need more than one word on that. So that's helpful to know. Thank you. Okay. Even health and wellness practitioners get stressed. What is something that helps you manage stress and optimize health outside of work?
I'll tell you the healthy thing first is exercise and unhealthy is wine.
You and I are
that it's unhealthy, but
I that's so funny. If I had to answer this question, I would say Bikram yoga is my healthy de-stressor, and a delicious glass of rosé would be my lazy de-stressor.
Right.
I love it. All right, finally, your one word answer to complete the sentence. As I age, I feel
humble.
Humble. That's a good one, and no one's used it yet. Dr. Molina, thank you so much. This has been really so incredible. I am excited. Everyone needs to put Spice Up and Live Long in their Amazon cart, in their bookshop.org cart, because it's a wealth of information. Before we say goodbye, how can our listeners find you, learn more about your podcast, and keep following your work?
I'm on Instagram. I have a website, Dr. Molina. It's DrMelina. And Instagram, Dr. Molina. I haven't brought myself to do TikTok. The podcast you can find at my website. And then my new company, which is really where all my heart and soul is going into right now, is Ahara, A-H-A-R-A. And it's really, it's, you know, there's tons of recipes too, some of which are from my chef, not from me, from my books. And you can get, you know, precision nutrition, without even having to do any testing, which is kind of cool, but it's my baby now. So it's where I'm super excited about putting the majority of my resources.
Fantastic. I'll put all of those in the show notes so listeners can find them. Thank you so much, Dr. Molina. This wraps A Certain Age, a show for women who are aging without apology. Want more of A Certain Age? Sign up for our newsletter, Age Boldly, over on our website, acertainagepod.com, or follow us on Instagram at acertainagepod. We share bonus content, giveaways, links, and midlife resources. Come hang out. Special thanks to Mike Lamancini, who composed and produced our theme music. See you next time, and until then, age boldly, beauties.